Behavioral Health Integrations podcast strives to inspire the next generation of mental health and addiction specialists. Our aim is to continue to raise awareness and encourage collaboration in the mental health and addiction industry so that it will continue to thrive. There are numerous approaches to treating mental health and substance abuse issues. On this show, we take pleasure in showcasing the diversity of these approaches used to improve the lives of others. So without further ado, your host, Jacob Minig.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Behavior Health Integration. Today, we have a very special guest, Steve Philp. Steve is a suicide prevention and workplace well-being advocate, as well as a LinkedIn influencer and keynote speaker. In today's episode, Steve will get into many different aspects of suicide prevention, awareness, and action plans. Steve is the founder of the Jordan Legacy. I, for one, am truly excited to have Steve on the show. So without further ado, let's begin. Well, Steve, thank you so much for being on the show, and I really appreciate it.
Now, Jacob, really good to be here. I know we've been a few weeks trying to put this together and time differences and all those kind of things. But real pleasure to be with you today. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it has been a little bit. But again, I feel like we both had a passion to make this work and we did it. And I just know it's going to be a great episode.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Very much looking forward to it.
So from what I hear is you're across the pond right now, right? As we say.
Yeah, we're just getting towards the end of our day with British summertime and the clock's going back. We are just coming up to, just gone 4 p.m. here, and it's already starting to get dark outside. So I'm in North Yorkshire in England, so a little way central and upwards, and beautiful countryside, lovely part of the world, lots of hills, and good cycling territory for me. So.
Well, again, I'm sure there's a lot going on now since the Queen passed away and the King's taken over, right?
Yeah, and we've got the Netflix series, The Royals, out now, and which is going to cause some consternation, I'm sure. So, yeah, we've had quite a time of it in the UK with some lack of clarity around who our Prime Minister might be and all kinds of things, really. So, some challenging times out there, of course, with cost of living crisis and all kinds of other issues. So, yeah, it's been an interesting year for sure over here.
I bet. So initially, I just want to start off by talking about what initially got you into the mental health field in the first place. Was there a particular motivation or event that occurred that really inspired you?
Well, yeah, I mean, we can call it an event, but it was certainly a very much a life-changing event for me. So, you know, my background, if this is useful, was that I spent 30 years in the world of consultancy and corporate speaking. I was a professional coach. More recently, for the past 11 years, I'd worked running my own consultancy practice around social media. So I would go in and coach and train large organizations from Harley Davidson and Toyota and law firms and professional services down to smaller businesses as well. And universities and business schools, how to engage with platforms like LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter. And people often used to look at me and say, well, you're not millennial. You know, what do you know about social media? Right. But I kind of really immersed myself in this world back in 2009 and developed a reputation in the UK as one of the leading guys, certainly in terms of LinkedIn knowledge. And on December the 4th of 2019, I was working with a large automotive group in the UK, around about 3.5 hours from home, driving. Delivered a workshop to that to the managers there, and got in my car. I had a journey ahead of me around about 3.5 hours, and got an incoming call. And that call was from my son, Jordan's girlfriend. My son's 34, and in a really distressed state, in a 2-minute call to me initially, of which I probably remember the first 15, 20 seconds of that call, she told me that she'd come home to Jordan's house and discovered that he'd killed himself, in her own words. And at that moment, as you can probably imagine, my life and everything I thought it was going to be and had planned for it to be, and everyone around Jordan's life, you know, suddenly in that phone call And the event of that afternoon changed. And that is ultimately the very short version of kind of what led me into to what I'm doing today.
Mm-hmm. No, I can't imagine, honestly, Steve, what you went through, just the emotions you were experiencing. And yeah, and again, what your life kind of looks like, because I can maybe get the assumption that, you know, you were never the same again, in a sense. Like, there's a different form of life that took place in that moment, and it's just different now, right?
Yeah, it's a really good way of putting it, Jacob. I think, you know, the Steve Phillips life before December the 4th, 2019, and the one afterwards, and the same for, you know, everyone in the family, you know, practically my life changed because of what I'm doing now, and that I wound up my business and consultancy practice. But, you know, there was a journey there that we went on, you know, following initial trauma and everything that we, mm-hmm. you know, I experienced physical trauma as a result of the event that had happened for some months. You have everything you have to deal with when someone dies in that manner. And, you know, it's your son, he's independent. He had his own house and, you know, had a career and all these things. And, you know, you've got to deal with all the affairs that have to be dealt with there. So, yeah, for some time, probably, you know, for the first few months, there's a period of thinking, well, what do you do now? And you know, a good friend of mine, you know, I remember him saying to me, you've got a choice now, really, Steve. You can sit on the sofa with a bottle. Mm-hmm. Certainly an option in terms of how I was feeling then. Or you can get up and you can do something. And he said, I kind of know you. He said, I've got an idea that you're not going to sit on the sofa with a bottle. Mm-hmm. You're going to get out there. And he was right, really. And what happened was, because we were experiencing so many issues with the coroner's office and police and this unknown journey that, you know, we had no route map for at all. You know, I was spending the first few days driving around local police stations mm-hmm. to find out who was looking after this case of my son. In fact, for the first 24, 48 hours, I was trying to find out where they'd even taken my son's body.
Oh.
I'm literally driving around police stations. So there was no support. There was no liaison. And all that was happening around this time, I started thinking, because I had no experience of suicide or anything like this. I thought, is this what is supposed to happen? You know, is this what it's like? So I decided to publish an article on LinkedIn. And this was literally 3 weeks after Jordan's death. So December the 16th. And it was called The Day My Son Took His Own Life. Now, I knew LinkedIn, knew it as a platform. I expected a response, but maybe not the response that I got. But it was, the article was published for two reasons. One, to kind of reach out and say, is this what I should be experiencing? Yeah. Is anyone else, you know, going through this? But also just to say, you know, this is the awful horror of what we've been left with following my son's suicide. Kind of, if you're thinking of doing the same, and you can just for a moment stop and think how this might impact those left behind. And that was my secondary goal. And what happened was, I got this huge outpouring globally. I had Arianna Huffington from the Huff Post, people like that emailing me. I had psychologists. I had families that had lost loved ones. I had people who were considering ending their own lives messaging me. And some of those came back and said, as a result of reading your article, I've changed my mind. And that was the turning point for me, really, Jacob, that moment that I thought, I don't think I'm ever going to do what I did before anymore. I've got a voice. I know that. Can I use this in some way? Mm-hmm. And that wasn't going to happen immediately. I knew that. This was only 3 weeks after Jordan's death. But already I knew I had to go on a path of learning more about mental health and suicide. I was very poorly equipped, very poor knowledge, even though I had a son that was diagnosed with clinical depression and anxiety 4 years earlier. My knowledge was atrocious, really. So I had to educate myself very quickly and speak with a lot of people and read books and articles and go to events and do all these kind of things. And that's really where my journey started into this world of mental health and suicide prevention.
Yeah. So is it safe to say that you found a significant meaning through this event and this experience?
Yeah, meaning it's interesting. I mean, I talk, you know, when I talk to organizations and to people, and you know, one of the things I say is if you're ever going to recover, if you recover is the right word,
Right.
or move forward from something like this, you need a sense of purpose.
Right.
I firmly believe that. You know, my purpose is to say, can I go out there now and prevent any more Jordans happening? You know, just,
Yeah.
you know, that was my sense of purpose. Some of that might have come from a feeling of failure on my part, with my own son. So maybe part of that was making up for that. So, yeah, in terms of meaning, I suppose we could call it purpose would be maybe the language I would use, but it really probably means, you know, very similar things to both of us.
Now, Steve, when you say failure on your part, can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Was it not checking in on them, or what did you mean by that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've gone through a process where I think, you know, when you lose someone close to, particularly to suicide, there's a range of emotions come up, and guilt is one of them, whether that's founded or not. But it is a feeling. Could I have done more? And you know, when I examined my own situation and my relationship with Jordan, you know, it was a good, loving family. Although his mum and I divorced and parted back in 2005, we kept a good relationship. Mm-hmm. But you know, we recognise that could have been one of the trigger events, one of numerous maybe in Jordan's life. But you know, we had a good, loving family, good relationship. We didn't see each other every week. You know, even though he only lived 20 minutes away, he had his own kind of life circle of friends and career. But we'd go out for a beer and we'd go out to a concert and we'd do stuff together. And, you know, so we had a good relationship. But I was busy. You know, I was a consultant, traveling around, doing all kinds of things. And, you know, Jordan was, in my eyes, managing his mental health. And the way he was doing that was that if he was struggling, he'd go back and see his doctor. He'd get another prescription for his antidepressants and manage that. It was not a big one for going for talking therapy or anything like that. So as long as I was kind of speaking to him, and when I was speaking to him or messaging with him, he said he was okay. Yeah. Then I figured he was okay. And even when his mum would be concerned, and she'd maybe message me and say, you know, I've been chatting with Jordan, I'm not sure he's right, and I'm not sure he's okay. And I said, well, look, let me give him a call. And I would give him a call and say, you know, how are things, Jordan? And he'd say he was fine. And I'd go back to his mum and say, Jordan says he's fine. And to come back to your question, that was a complete lack of knowledge on my part of really how mental health can affect people and the risks associated with depression. You know, if he told me he was struggling to sleep, to me, it meant he was struggling to sleep. What that didn't mean was that is a sign that if this continues, it could lead to suicidal thoughts. What's happened now is I've become educated. Mm-hmm. I understand the path that people go on. I understand more about mental health and suicide and these issues now. And part of my goal and objective now, really, Jacob, is to say, not, you know, I'm not a mental health professional. I'm not going to become a psychologist or anything like that at all. But none of us actually need anology. We don't need any form of quote. We just need to get a better understanding of mental health and the risks around that, even at a very basic level. You can take a 30-minute online course these days, video course, to learn about how to have a conversation with someone you're concerned about. And I think I didn't have the tools I needed at the time. And when we talk about failure, I suppose it was a failure for me to take a real active concern and interest in Jordan's mental health. Is that blame? I kind of don't use the blame word anyway. I've just accepted the fact that for whatever reasons, I did not take an active interest in his mental health to the level I should have done, in my view. My job now is to go out to other parents, to go out to workplace bosses and others and say, this is real. This is the level that it's happening at. You need, and we all need, to take a responsibility to understand mental health better than we do.
And absolutely. And again, it's just really passionate to like hear the story from you and to know how many other lives you're saving because of the work you are doing right now with other parents, educating other parents on how to interact with their children when they're going through tough times. I mean, you're doing amazing work, Steve. You really are. Like,
no, I mean, thank you, Jacob. I mean, I do get the messages from people, and one has to assume that if you hear, you know, a handful of messages from people saying you've made a difference or you've helped me, you know, say my child, you know, just this week, you know, I've heard a very similar story, then, you know, I kind of hope that there are others that I'm not hearing from that it's also having that same impact. But look, you know, this is exactly why I do what I do. And, you know, if this is me dealing with my grief in this way and saying, right, okay, I didn't get it right maybe first time, but maybe I can go out and make a difference now. Mm-hmm. We hear this so often, don't we? Out of traumatic situations, people suddenly change, you know, their lives and go out there and want to make a difference because of, you know, usually some traumatic event that's happened to them. So yeah, but you know, thank you. I appreciate that. And but it's important to me that we do whatever we can do to, you know, stop people taking their own lives, really. Absolutely. You know, we lose 700,000 people every year globally. There's one person every 14 seconds. You know, it's the biggest killer in the UK of young people under the age of 35, both men and women. You know, it's not road traffic accidents, not cancer, not diabetes, not heart attack. It's suicide. It's the second leading cause in the US of deaths between 10 and 34 year olds.
Yep.
You know, we cannot, you know, something's sadly wrong if that number of people are, you know, taking their own lives.
Why do you think that is? Is it more just like the new culture nowadays, the mentality we take?
It's, you know, one of the things I've learned and the research would say there's never a single issue, or very rarely is there a single issue that leads someone to take their own life. It's often very complex. It can be a number of experiences, often initiating from childhood through life, mm-hmm. that build over time. And what happens is that we know that these situations build to a point where people start to feel hopeless. They start to feel trapped in situations that could be trapped in relationships, trapped in their career, trapped with finances, trapped in the environment they live in, and they see no way out. And once those kind of thoughts start to happen, then people start to consider suicide as an option. You know, what is the way out of this? Can't see any other way other than one. So quite often what happens is people plan for this, and mm-hmm. plans can form over years, months and years. Actively thinking about suicide is something that happens in a much shorter period of time. And that's the crossover from, yeah, I've been thinking about suicide. I've actually written down that I have a plan. I have a backup plan in case I need it. But then there is that tipping point, usually a trigger of some kind, mm-hmm. that will say, okay, that's it. That I'm going to activate my plan, if you like. And what's really interesting about that is that, and a lot of people might struggle to kind of hear this, is that decision then becomes the most rational thought for that person.
Yeah.
And is, we know that a high proportion of people who end their own lives have a mental health illness, but not everyone.
Right.
And you know, these are thought out plans that seem absolutely rational to that person at the time, and they're not in some kind of maybe psychotic state or something like that. And a lot of people can just not understand that it is, you know, a plan and an action to carry out that plan that's considered and thought through, often in the most rational of states, really. So, yeah, sorry, just to, you know, kind of add to your point there. Are we seeing an increase in suicides? We're certainly not seeing a fall in suicides. Levels have been very consistent, I think, globally. There'll be different pockets, different areas, peaks, mm-hmm. such as Japan and other areas globally where we've seen increases in recent years. The pandemic certainly has a huge impact on mental health, but as yet, certainly in the UK, it's not yet translated to increased suicides. But I use the word yet because there's a long tail to the effects of COVID, and mm-hmm. Some of those have been manifested in the financial crisis, although we know the war in Ukraine is also playing a part there. But But what we do know is we're seeing higher instances of self-harm in young people, particularly young women. Now that's on the increase. And I think the world of kind of suicide prevention and mental health is looking at all this very closely and understanding that the age particularly of suicide and suicide attempts is getting younger. Yeah. And you start to question, well, why is that? What are the pressures on young people today? Is it social media? Is it, you know, all kinds of things? But, you know, the generation of today has very different challenges to the generation that I grew up in as a teenager or a young person. So I hope that helps a little bit.
I'm glad you brought up social media too, because there's a lot of different aspects to look at that. Just nowadays, if you want to use Instagram or Facebook as an example, I feel at times it does a lot more like bad issue. It causes more bad issues than it helps people, or causes more harm than good. Again, you could use it appropriately, but again, if you take out like Facebook, it's like we weren't meant to know what other people were thinking 24/7. We weren't meant to know what's going on with other people's lives. There's like, I've known people in my circle that would announce their divorce on Facebook. Now everybody knows like your husband cheated on you, this and that. Where it's like, we're not meant to know that. And then you mix in like cyberbullying for the elementary, junior high kids. I mean, there's no escape.
Yeah, you know, I kind of look back to my teenage years and say, you know, how complicated was my life? I didn't have a mobile phone. If we were going to meet some friends, we kind of see them at school and say, we'll meet you on Saturday in the park. And hey, if you were there, you were there. If you weren't, you weren't there. You know, we go and kick a football around, and the only thing we had to worry about was whether we'd be late home for supper, you know. You know, life was arguably simpler. Yeah, we had different issues. Yeah, we had bullying at school and things like that still happen. But suddenly we've got this world of huge communication and you know, that impacts our brains. There's almost overwhelming level of information. Not all of it is bad, but it's still a huge amount of information to deal with. And we know that, you know, social media, it creates a lot of issues. We know that from, you know, cyberbullying to just the fact that we are all comparing our lives with everyone else, even adults. We you know, it's all we're there for. We're there to say, this is what I've done today. Kind of look at me.
Yeah.
But simultaneously, we're looking at what our friends have done and going, oh, wow, that's nice. I wish I could do that. Or I'm really sorry to hear about that. So this constant comparison is taking place with, is my life the same as this? And yet we know this huge good comes out of social media. You know, I just look at what I've been able to achieve in the last 2.5 years through social media and the following and the network that I've been able to build and the issues that I've been able to share. You know, some of the great groups and support groups that are out there. You know, for me to put a tweet out just the other day about, you know, an anniversary with Jordan, but talk about mental health issues, and for, you know, 8,000 people to react and respond to that, you know, with a lot of love. And you think, you know, it's not the platform, is it? You know, the platform can be good. You know, well, platform can't be good or bad, but it's the people that engage on it. So the thing is, the volume of it is ramped up. You know, if you go and share your story on a soapbox in the middle of the high street, yeah, you're going to get a couple of people shout at you.
Yep.
Not the end of the world. And you get a few people give you applause. And that's kind of your day. But on social media, you suddenly got, you know, 500 people shouting at you and however many applauding. It's just magnified, I think, at such a huge level.
Well, and it's a great way to, again, get your material out to the world. Like the Jordan Legacy, you know, I'm sure sharing that on Facebook, LinkedIn. And it's a more effective way to, again, helping others from all across the world.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation today if it wasn't for LinkedIn. You know, I had another interview this morning with someone from South Africa, and you know, the world has become much smaller as a result. We've become arguably better connected, or certainly connected with more people. Some people would argue whether we're better connected. We're certainly connecting with more people. The argument is always going to be, what's the quality of that connection? There's only so many people you can closely connect with. But it has helped us get our message out there. You know, when all this started, and you know, you mentioned the Jordan legacy there, Jacob, and you know, and I started to realize I had this voice, and I thought, what is it I want to do? And I was really fortunate to meet a guy who'd recently moved back from Australia to the UK, just down the road from me, a few miles, and Paul Vittles had huge experience working in suicide prevention in Australia. He'd worked closely with the government, with government strategy. And he'd come back and he was kind of looking to settle back in the UK and continue with this work. And came through LinkedIn, we came together. And Paul's been with me ever since then. And Paul kind of introduced me to this world of suicide prevention. And through our conversations and the types of people he was connecting with me, I got to learn about the zero suicide community. Mm-hmm. And the zero suicide community really came out of the healthcare systems in the US, this whole philosophy of zero suicide, and particularly from Detroit and the Henry Ford healthcare system over there, where they'd taken people who were known to mental health services, put them through a framework and a program to support and look after them, and over a four-year period managed to reduce the suicides that typically happen to that group of people by 75%.
Oh, wow.
And in 1 year, got it to zero. And that kind of where the zero suicide framework and philosophy came from. It was then replicated in the UK through Merseycare Healthcare, and then in Australia and other places. So the zero suicide community that I was educated about was to say, look, we know that the research shows us that most suicides are preventable if early intervention is in place, mm-hmm. and the right support. We know from conversations with people who have attempted to take their own lives that most people do not want to die. They want to remove the pain they're experiencing. So we know those are facts. The studies have been done. So we know most suicides are preventable, but realistically, we know we can't prevent them all. But what is the target you should aim for? And if you were to speak to a school or, you know, a business and say, what do you think the target should be for suicides in your school or business? I think most time people would say, it's got to be zero, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Not going to say 10%. What, really? You're going to let another 90% of children take their own lives then?
Right.
Oh, God, no. Probably should be zero, shouldn't it? So when you talk to most people, that's what they'll suggest and say. When you talk to governments, they'll look at it in a very different way and go, well, we're going to shoot for 10% in the next 5 years. And then, by the way, they don't hit that target, mm-hmm. Very rarely. So they've got low ambition and don't even achieve that low ambition. So zero suicide is, what can we do in a practical sense in our communities and our workplaces to prevent as many suicides as possible, yeah. Have an ambition for zero, which means we will always be working toward it. And that was really where the Jordan legacy was born. We were not going to be a crisis helpline website. We were not going to be a training organization, yeah. Despite me delivering many talks. And we were going to work with communities and workplaces to look at what can be done,
yeah.
in a practical sense.
Yeah, no, I love what you said. And it's also important to know it too. It's kind of like the silent killer in a sense, because you don't know, because again, they could be put on that mask that everything's okay, or like they tell a parent everything's okay. But even now in America, there's been a lot of commercials like really trying to get that message out where okay does not always mean okay. So to maybe pursue with more questions, I guess the parent could take, get deeper into it.
Yeah, I mean, I've just been having this conversation today and with a group of people yesterday that we sat around in a room together. And we know if we go and ask somebody how you're doing, 99% of the time, they're going to look at you, big smile on the face, and say, yeah, I'm doing fine. And we can go, right, tick that box.
Yep.
I've asked the question. Wow, that's a relief. They're fine. And it's kind of going back to what I said about Jordan and his mum. You know, I'm worried about Jordan. I just called him. He says he's fine. But what I didn't do was I didn't dig deeper.
Yeah.
I didn't say, okay, George, but tell me how you're really doing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do that. I asked that first layer question. And you're absolutely right, Jacob. What we got to learn to do as parents, as friends, as work colleagues, whatever, we've got to be able to just look. The only reason we're asking the question is because we have a concern. Okay. Otherwise, it's just an extension of hello, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. So I'm only asking you this because I've got a concern. So if you kind of fob me off by saying you're fine, but I've seen some evidence, and it could be you're drinking a bit more, you're not sleeping well, you've been driving your car like a lunatic just lately. There's just something about your appearance and the way you're dressed. You're coming into work late. Whatever it is, you're more moody, you know, quiet. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is I've seen, that is the reason why I'm asking you the question. So I'm not going to let you off with that. I'm fine. I'm just going to say, how are you really doing?
Yep.
Well, and just look at them.
I also feel like human beings, especially men, can be at times less in tune with their emotions, and they're more of a fix it. They have a fix it mentality where, again, I'm not a father. I don't have any kids or whatever, but if I did have a son and they're telling me, oh, you know, I'm struggling sleeping, I'm not gonna lie, like my mentality could go the route of, well, let's see a doctor, give you some sleep meds. We'll see how that goes. Like fix, you know, not getting in deep with it, with the conversation.
Yeah, it's a really good point. You know, as parents, we all want to fix our kids. Okay, mm-hmm. So firstly, but generally, men historically have been fixers. We see ourselves as fixers. You know, even when we were living in caves or wherever, you know, we're the fixer. And if we can't fix something, oh Lord, you know, our whole manhood and everything is gone. You know. So, but that is a human trait as well, that if we see someone kind of struggling, we automatically want to go in and make it better and fix it.
Yes.
And I think what's really important, you know, and I talk a lot, you know, with parents about this, take the pressure off yourself and understand that you might not be able to fix this. But what you can do is you can ask the right questions. You can ask the right questions without any judgment or bringing any of your baggage in. And you can listen. And then you can say, and how can I help?
Mm-hmm.
And the listening is by far the most important thing, I think, that we can all do. You know, most people I've spoken to that have been in a crisis or a difficult situation have said, you know, I didn't necessarily want anyone, I didn't want them to fix me. I just wanted someone to listen.
To love them where they're at.
Yeah, just to validate what I'm feeling, what I'm going through here. And that can be the biggest thing we can do. And we can all do that. We don't need a training course. Well, some people might need a training course. I don't know. But but we can all hopefully listen properly, actively.
Yeah, just meeting them where they're at and just knowing them, especially, let's say, hypothetically, they're going through like an addiction. You're loving them where they're at. You're not judging them, and you're always going to be there for them.
Yeah, you know, this judgment, you know, addiction is a, you know, really, you know, interesting topic because, you know, whether it's addiction, whether it's alcohol, whether it's drugs, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's someone saying I'm going to kill myself, you know, I've heard the language, you know, you're not going to don't do anything silly or, you know, that, you know, stupid, you shouldn't be doing that. You know, immediately these are judgments we place on people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not for us to judge why that person has this addiction. Okay. Whatever our views are and our upbringing or anything like that, at that moment, our views are to say, you know, can I be there for that person? Meet them where they're at, as you say, and ask them questions. You know, genuinely show you're there to support and listen. But importantly, know that if I have listened and I've understood and that person genuinely wants some help, where do I go then?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's in my tool bag? Who am I going to refer them to? Is it their doctor? Is it, you know, healthcare provision, a charity? And again, you know, part of our education here is to just to let people know what's out there. You know, there's some great services that I'm sure if you Google in the States that, you know, you can recommend and signpost people to. And we kind of need this little kit, don't we, mm-hmm. that just says, okay, I'm going to have a chat with this person. Have I got a list of people that in my phone that if I came across a good friend that was struggling, you know, we could signpost them to.
Absolutely. Well, I would love to actually hear more about the Jordan Legacy if you want to explain more detail about that. That would be great.
Yeah, thanks, Jacob. So the Jordan Legacy is a registered company. We're a community interest company, abbreviated to CIC. The CICs have been around for quite some time now, but they're not a full charity, registered charity. But a community interest company is, as it suggests, it's there to provide benefit to the community. Very much like a limited company in its structure. We're quite a small organisation, small team, but I've managed to build many connections and networks and people that we work with. And what we've done over the last 2.5 years is we've looked at our zero suicide strategy in kind of four layers or four groups of people, if you like, we want to engage with. So we know we want to engage with the community. And a community can be schools, it can be sports clubs, just general public, whoever it would be. We want to engage them in this discussion around suicide and what they can do in a practical sense to help prevent it. Second layer will be workplaces, where we go into workplaces. A lot of the work that I do is talk to companies about their workplace culture, about their employee well-being programs and their suicide prevention frameworks and strategies. So that's a lot of our work there. The third layer is what we call designing out suicide. And what it's almost like designing out the process of suicide. And that's originally where the term came from. But it's been more closely adopted in the world of construction. So those people that are responsible for designing and constructing bridges, buildings, and places, outdoor spaces where people might choose to end their own lives, we engage with those audiences. For example, we might speak to surveyors. We've run live sessions and discussion panels, often with 600 or 700 people attending. And we did a lot of those types of events. And we will have panel discussions around how can you design your next bridge or your next building with suicide prevention in mind, so that you don't have to suddenly make the bridge look ugly, you don't have to put barricades up and do all these things. You can design it in a way it still is great for someone to walk across or drive across and use, but there's no way somebody, or they really have to struggle to kind of get up there to jump off. And the fourth layer is the digital community. You know, what emerging technologies are coming out, from apps to beacons to monitor activities on construction sites, for example. So again, we've run live events, panel discussions and events around the digital community, you know, what tech is coming out. And we're kind of 2 years into this now. And with those kind of four layers, our goal and ambition now is having raised awareness in all these areas and had these debates and had these discussions, some of which we know practical solutions have been taken away and used that have worked. We've had that feedback. Where we go next with the Jordan legacy is to say, how do we take those four layers and really work more closely with those communities to get them to implement zero suicide frameworks into their sports club, into their school, into their business, into their technology, whatever it may be. And that's where we go in 2022. We also have one kind of fifth layer and an ambition, and this is a real vision for us in the next few years, and that is to do something really that Jordan wanted. And we've got this ambition to build Jordan's Place. And Jordan's Place really came out of a conversation that I had with Jordan's girlfriend some months after Jordan had taken his own life. And Charlotte and I were chatting one day, and she said, "Did I ever tell you about a conversation Jordan and I had?" She said that we were just making breakfast, having a conversation. And I just asked him what he'd do if he ever won the lottery, and thought he'd say, "I'd buy a big car, we'd have a bigger house, or we'd go on a holiday." And he just said, I'd take that money and I'd invest it in a place where people who are struggling can come to and get well again. And, you know, as soon as I heard that, I knew at some point we would do this, and we will. You know, whether that takes 2 more years, 3 more years, whatever it takes, we will construct that place and have that place built, because we know that's something that Jordan wanted.
Oh, that's special. That is so meaningful. And
I have no doubt you are going to do it. You know, normally I'd say I wish you the best of luck. No, like I have a feeling you're going to do this, and it's going to be amazing for you.
Yeah, someone will have to stop me, but
yeah, exactly.
yeah, definitely. So that's a lot of the work we do. We just recently, quite exciting, in June, we launched our own radio show called Jordan's Space. We have just about a broadcast at 7 p.m. UK time tomorrow night, our 11th show. And, you know, these are co-hosted with Paul that I mentioned and my daughter, Danielle, Jordan's sister, who came started working with us last year. And we have a guest interview every week, you know, people with lived experience or working in suicide prevention. Some really powerful stories we've had on there. And they're all on our website. They're recorded stories, but yeah, we use a local internet radio station called Yawa Radio that broadcasts globally. It's quite an inspiring radio station, and we have a regular slot on Thursday evenings there over here. So that's been exciting. That's, you know, something that's a little different as well.
How would someone from America get a hold of that? Is there an app we need to download?
Yeah, well, really, really easy. So firstly, if you go to the JordanLegacy.com website, that's probably the easiest place to go. Okay. We're just having a new website constructed, by the way, so it's going to have its own special place. Okay. But right now on the top menu, you will see a menu that says News, Events, Radio.
Okay.
And if you just click in there, one of the drop-down posts near the top is all about the radio station, how you can listen to it, how you can get on there. As I say, it's going to have its own purpose-built place on the new website, and that's launched in a few weeks' time. But it's internet, so you can access it globally. We also do repeat recordings at a midnight in the UK time on Fridays and Mondays, so that people, different time zones, can kind of pick it up then as well. But yeah, it's nice because we choose, each guest that comes on gets to choose their own music tracks.
Oh, that's cool.
So we play songs in between the links and the breaks that kind of mean something to them, or if it's someone they've lost, the same. And some pretty amazing things we're kind of really proud of that we're doing. Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. That's such an inspiration and so special. And I love it. I love it. And, I'm going to be your supporter. If you ever need anything, I'm there for you, man. That's
well, awesome. You're doing an amazing job here, Jack. You know, by sharing our story, you know, every time someone like yourself gets in touch, and, you know, you're doing a great job with all the podcasts that you share on these, you know, quite challenging topics at times. But equally, you're sharing our story, you know, with an audience, and just a little something. I don't think whether we've shared this or not, but I know you're in Minneapolis. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So Jordan and I and his family, we used to live not too far away.
Really?
From you. Yeah. We emigrated in the early 90s to Winnipeg.
Okay.
So just a little over the border,
yeah,
but not that far away. And yeah, we were there for several years.
That's awesome.
Affectionately known as Winterpeg, of course.
Yep. Oh yeah, of course.
And Jordan loved his hockey, loved his NFL and CFL, and
I bet.
And he was a big basketball player. So he loved North America, that's for sure. Yeah.
Well, Steve, it has been such an honor and a pleasure having you on the show. It was really awesome. I just have to ask you, too, if any of my fans or my listeners want to get a hold of you, is there a particular email or number or what? Not
yeah, I think just start. Yeah, my email might get a bit overwhelmed. So I think two things. If the website, you can contact us. I get those. They come through to me. So if you go to thejordanlegacy.com, contact us. You can reach us directly there. We mentioned LinkedIn, obviously hugely active on LinkedIn. So if you just search Steve Philip, and that's two L's and no S on the end, you know, there are not many with that spelling, you'll find me. They're really happy to connect with any of your listeners as well. But they're probably the best two channels, I would think, Jacob, yeah.
Okay, good. And all my listeners, I will make sure I put those links on my show notes, so Steve will be one click away. And again, Steve, it was a blessing. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Really appreciate the invitation, Jack. Great to finally get to meet and talk with you. Thanks very much.
Amen.
I just want to thank Steve for being an awesome, amazing behavioral health integration guest. I just want to thank all of my listeners for your support. And just to inform everyone that the information expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a medical doctor or a licensed mental health therapist. And if anyone has any further questions for me, you can reach me at my email address, behaviorhealthintegration121@gmail.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn at Jacob Minig, where you will find more educational posts on psychotherapy, trauma, and addiction. And finally, you can follow me on my website, which is behaviorhealthintegration.org. I also want to inform everyone that there is a great new device out there called Calmigo. It's a breathing device meant to control and manage your breathing rates and the depth of your breathing as you inhale and exhale to, again, help relieve any type of anxiety and stress-like symptoms. And if you do put the BHI podcast into the promo code, you get $30 off this amazing device. It is a once-in-a-lifetime deal, and you will not be disappointed. All right, everyone, until next time, have a good day. Bye.